He was a crazy man in his late 70s, and he lived on a piece of property with numerous self-built huts with dirt as the floor. In these huts, he housed numerous rabbits, but in one of these huts is where he lived. He was alone. He was not very well kept. He was angry. And that is when my dad met him. This man lived a few miles down the road from our family in the small town of Glenville, California. My dad saw him walking down the road one day and stopped to offer him a ride into town where he needed to get food for his rabbits. As my dad learned a little more of his story, he went home and shared with my mom, and they decided that as our neighbor, we should help him out. Now, we are a family with four young kids, all born within 5 years of each other. And if you asked me today as a mom, I don't think like this sounds like the best idea. But my mom agreed that it was our responsibility to be a neighbor to this man. So my parents would load up us four kids, and they would take us to his property. I remember it had a very distinct smell of rabbit urine. It was not a pleasant smell. And as I said, he wasn't the nicest man. So it wasn't something we looked forward to doing, but something my parents had committed to taking us to do. So we would go and we would help feed his rabbits, and we would spend time with him. My mom would make an extra serving of whatever dinner we were having. She would bake fresh baked cookies, as she often did in our home, and we would go deliver them to him. My dad would go and pick him up and take him to the store whenever needed. And we began to build a relationship with Walter. These past several weeks, you guys have been learning of what it looks like to live in community with other believers. What it looks like to live in community with our church family, with our family, to those we don't know, and to people like Walter, our neighbors. You guys have looked at Acts chapter 2, which we're going to look at again. And in Acts chapter 2, it reminds us of the fellowship of believers. It says this, it says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day, they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Today, we are going to concentrate on verse 26. It says, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. Every day in their homes. See, they lived in homes or tents or huts near each other. We can say that's why it was so easy for them to do this. They lived in community with each other constantly, on a daily basis. Their homes were open to anyone who wanted to enter. They shared meals together daily. They moved from church to home, from temple to table, together daily. They shared in meals together. They shared in conversation together. They invested in each other. Somewhere along the line, this has stopped. In other countries, this is still familiar to them, but to us, it's not so familiar. Our homes have become our own sanctuary, a place where we get to be with those we choose and live in our safe bubble, not allowing others in. It's a place where we can hide our messes, our failures, our mess ups, and only those who live in close proximity with us will ever know them. It's a place where we get to go and unwind. It's a place that has become about us. When we think of inviting others in, as I prepared this message, I realized how much I fall into this trap. We can think of all the reasons why. It's our safe place. We're so busy that when we're home, it's kind of a place we just want to relax and not have to entertain. We don't want to have to invest in anyone else. We do that outside our homes all the time. We may think our house is too messy and I don't have the energy to clean it. That would be me. We think, well, I'm not the best cook, so having people over for a meal, that's just really not me. I don't even cook for those that live with me, right? We can come up with excuse after excuse. Some of us, our home is a place where maybe our relationships in our home aren't what they should be. And so if we keep others out, they won't ever know that side of us. They only know what we show when we put on our happy face and go out into the world. We can show up at church on Sunday and we can all put on a smile no matter what just happened on the drive here, right? But at home, when we invite people to come into our home, inside our four walls, we become vulnerable and raw. They're going to see the real us. They're going to see our mess, figuratively and realistically, right? So we keep them out. But our homes are meant to be a place where we can invite others in to share life and community with them. Our homes were never intended to be just a place for us. Daniel Groth says it like this: home is a gateway in which the kingdom of God moves into earth. So today, my question is this: as a believer, have you made the decision to make your home a place to be used for God's glory? Have you committed your home to be holy ground? That every relationship that exists inside your home and with those you bring into your home is a relationship that will glorify God. Do you see it as a place and a way to show others who God is and his love for them? Is it a place where others can come and feel and experience a glimpse of heaven on earth? Is it a place that those who live in your home get to experience a glimpse of heaven on earth? And if not, I'm going to ask you why. Like I said, as I prepared this message, I had a lot to look at myself. So I don't want you to feel today as if I am talking at you, but instead sharing with you in what we're called to be. Today we're going to look at three intended purposes for a home as a follower of Christ. Our first is our home should be a place of hospitality. I know some of you, the word hospitality just makes you cringe. You can easily dismiss, this isn't for me because I am not a host. I don't even like people. And so we can easily say, that's not me. I don't need to listen to this. Guess what? God's called us all to be hospitable. We see over and over examples in the Bible of them inviting not just other believers into their home, but complete strangers into their home. They invite them in, they share meals together, they have conversation together. It's not only those that they keep close to them. Their home is a committed place that God can be at work. One of my favorite examples of this is the story of two sisters who lived together. You might be familiar with it. Their names are Mary and Martha. We find it in Luke chapter 10, 38 to 42, and we're going to read that together today. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. Now, how many of you can relate a little bit to Martha? You're okay opening your home to others, but you're so busy making sure that it's perfect that there's no intentional relationship that happens when they're there. See, hospitality is more than just hosting. Hospitality involves our heart. It's opening our homes to other people, inviting them in, and sitting at their feet. Not literally, but as Mary did, pausing from the busyness of our home being perfect and just spending time together. It is there that God can begin to work in us and in those who are invited in. See, our small group, they've become our safe place. My home is very rarely what I actually want it to be and what I think it should be. But I've let down those walls and those barriers with our small group. We have all agreed that it's okay for us to see each other's mess. It's okay if there's piles of mail sitting on my table, we just move them out of the way to share a meal together. It's okay if they come in and they see that the stresses of life have gotten to us and I may not respond to my husband or kids in the way that I should. It's okay. But through us sharing time in our homes together, sharing meals together, studying God's word together, it has created a deep relationship that cannot be broken. A relationship that's built on the foundation of Christ. That's what happens when we open our homes. And I'm guilty of it stopping there. If any of you come up and ask to come to my house today after church for lunch, my answer would probably be no, because my house isn't ready, right? So what is holding us back? What is causing us to keep our home the secret place instead of a sacred place? Martha was being hospitable in this story. She was showing hospitality. She was the one who invited Jesus to come. She was the one who was preparing everything. She wanted it to be perfect. She just missed the heart. She missed her opportunity to sit and learn and build deep relationship with him while he was in her presence. In our homes, when we take time to invite people in, when we take time to pause and be with them and build relationship with them, we show them that they matter not only to us, but through us, they may even see a glimpse of God. I got to see this lived out in many ways in my home. My parents opened our home to many of our friends as they needed a place to stay. It was very rarely just the six of us in our home, but the very earliest memory I have of this example takes us back to Walter. Walter went from being our neighbor that we had committed to caring for and getting to know to living in our home. I wouldn't suggest that you all go find a crazy old man from Russia and move him into your home. But see, my parents weren't looking for that. But when they got a phone call that his property had burned and he was badly burned, he spent multiple months in the hospital and in a rehab facility where my dad would go to visit him. And when my dad would go to visit him, his anger that he already had become increasingly more because he hated being in this facility. But there was one problem. He couldn't be released if he didn't have a home to go to and somebody to care for him. So my dad came home. He shared this with my mom, who decided it would be best to move him into our home. Why not? There's already six of us. What's one more? So they moved him into our home, where he lived for multiple months. And not only did my mom have to care for us four kids all day while my dad was at work and make sure that we were safe from this crazy old man all day, but she also had to invest in him. See, he had wounds that needed cleaning and bandaged. She had to do it. It's not what she signed up for. It's not what she asked for. It's not what she needed. But when God called her to do this and to use our home for his glory and hopes that maybe this man would see even just a glimpse of God's love through our family doing this, how could she say no? How could she miss this opportunity that God had called her to? By inviting others in and doing life with them doesn't sound so hard after you hear this story, right? Having someone over for lunch seems pretty simple if the alternative is moving this crazy man in with you, right? You're not being asked to bandage wounds of a man you barely know. We're just asked to open our home. Our next point is this: home is a place of discipleship. Home is the first place that we learn how and who we are. And who we should be. Good or bad, our habits and who we are formed by the home that we grew up in or are currently living in. Who we are is formed by our home and those who disciple us along the way. Whether we're single or married, whether we're currently parenting, looking forward to parenting one day, empty nesters, or never had kids, we are all called to use our home as a place of discipleship. Discipleship is described as this: the journey of spiritual growth for a follower of Christ. It involves learning from Jesus, imitating his life, and striving to live in a similar way. So this involves learning, living, and teaching. To disciple others, it takes intentionality, like we saw the example in Mary. She sat at Jesus' feet so that she could learn from him what it looked like to serve others. From there, it was her job to go and live it out, to imitate what she learned from him and go and live it out, teaching others how to do the same. When we hear the word discipleship, many of us think of church. We come and we learn together, and then it stops there. A lot of times with discipleship, we think of just the teaching, the learning part of it. And we forget the imitating, the going out and imitating who Jesus is and who he has called us to be. We get the amazing opportunity to imitate Jesus to others. That's huge, and we miss it. Discipleship starts in our homes. Yes, church is a great place for discipleship. We want to come and be discipled, but how many of us are signing up to disciple someone else? It's a big responsibility, isn't it? We let fear overtake us, and we think of all the reasons that we aren't good at discipling others. I think of Jesus and his 12 disciples. They weren't the people that got to come in contact with him occasionally. They weren't the people who got to see little glimpses of him along the way. They were the people who lived in close proximity in everyday life with him. They got to walk alongside of him, and they got to live life with him. It was the people closest to him. How many of us feel a lot more comfortable discipling someone outside of our home than we do the people living inside our home with us? Because those in our home, they see our mistakes. They see our failures. And we begin to think things like, who am I to teach them when I struggle to do it? And so we let fear overtake us. The people in our homes, the people we do everyday life with, whether that's our kids or our spouses or a friend we live with, or maybe we live alone, but people that come in and out of our home, maybe it is your neighbors that you do life with every day. Those people that get to see the real raw us, it's still our responsibility to disciple them and allow them to disciple us. So I'm going to speak to those of you that are married right now. Do you use your relationship with your spouse as a way to live out a life that mimics Jesus? To serve and to grow and encourage one another? To look at it as an opportunity that not only our spouse may see a glimpse of God through our actions and how we are to them, but that others who see us interact with each other might see God at work in and through us with how we are together. At a marriage retreat, I once heard it said, "What if your marriage was meant to make you happy, or not to make you happy, but to make you holy?" In no way am I saying that holiness and happiness cannot coexist, because I fully believe that they do. What I'm saying is your marriage, it's not about you. It's not about what makes you happy. It's about living a life together that points to Jesus. A life together that grows you in your relationship as you learn to be an example of him to your spouse. An excuse we might be thinking is, but my spouse doesn't love me the way that Christ does, so why should I do that for them? It doesn't matter. We have to live out what God has called us to be, regardless of if others decide to do the same. Our marriages should be a place that we grow together in our relationship with Christ, that we encourage one another, that accountability can happen. I'm with you. I don't love being held accountable by my husband, but I'm thankful that he does it. As we seek Jesus together, we will disciple each other to a stronger relationship with Jesus. Now I'm going to talk to those of you that are parenting or have parented. Whether you're grandparents and you have adult children, you have college children, little kids in the home. If you have been a parent, this is for you. It is a huge responsibility, not one to be taken lightly. Working as the children's pastor, I get to see a lot of parents who rely on the church to disciple their kids. That's great. I love that opportunity. But discipleship starts in your home. Your kids can come and they can hear all about Jesus. They can learn the stories of who he is. They can even grasp his love for them. But as a parent, your job is to continue teaching what they're learning here, not only through words, but through your actions. Your kids are watching the way that you live everyday life. And as a follower of Christ, every part of our life needs to be surrendered to him. Every part. Our jobs, our homes, our marriages, our parenting, our relationships with everyone need to be surrendered fully to him, and we need to take that responsibility seriously. I know as a parent, I feel the most inadequate out of anyone to teach my kids that. It's easy for me to come teach your kids about Jesus, but see, my kids, they get to see the times that I'm full of doubt. They get to see the times where I'm broken. They get to see the times where life gets so hard that I can't even see a way out. But see, we've allowed our kids to also celebrate with us as we see God answer a prayer. Our kids have gotten to experience and walk through the heartache with us so that they can also celebrate as God worked in a miraculous way. God doesn't call me to be the perfect parent. He calls me to be obedient in discipling my kids that he's entrusted to me, to doing my best to point them back to him regardless of my flaws and my failures, to be open and honest with my kids about the times that I need forgiveness, that I've messed up. As our kids have gotten older, we have two away at college and one in high school, and it's left Nate and I questioning quite a bit, as I know those of you that have older kids can relate to. Did I point to Jesus enough? Did I teach them? Not just with my words, but with my actions. Is their relationship with Jesus authentic and real, or did they live that way because we told them to? The real test comes when they move out and they get to make those decisions. Are they going to get up on Sunday morning and go to church? Are they going to find a church where they're at? They get to choose that. And so it's left us questioning, did we do enough? But see, it's not about us. We have to surrender them into God's hands and trust that if we were obedient and discipled them to turn to God, then we have to trust that they will continue doing that outside of our home. A few weeks ago, one of our sons shared with us, he was talking to a friend who asked him, what was it like to grow up in a pastor's home? Now, our kids didn't always grow up in a pastor's home. We became pastors once they were all in school, and so it was different for them. I asked him what his answer was, because a lot of people know that can be difficult. A lot of pressure is put on them, or they see parents living one way here and another way here. And he said his response was this. He said, I loved it because my dad and mom were the same at church as they were at home. Now, I'm not telling you that to brag on us, because there were many times that my kids got to see us failing. There are many times that my kids got to see anger get the best of me. There are many times that I had to go to my kids and ask for forgiveness for not living out who I say I am. Because it's easiest to let that guard down with those closest to us. I share that to encourage you today, if you are a parent and you're scared of if you have done enough or done it right, Or you look and say, maybe I didn't do it right. Or your kid has maybe wandered away from their faith. I want to encourage you today that all we are called to do is be obedient. To disciple them the best way that we can and trust that God will do the rest. We have gotten to watch as our kids have seen the importance of discipleship. They have seen the importance of us surrounding ourselves and our family with other friends and families who have walked through our darkest times with us, covering us in prayer, pointing us back to Jesus. They see the importance of that. And so now we've gotten to watch our kids step into what they are called to be and begin to disciple others. I've had the blessing of my own kids teaching me, coming and offering forgiveness freely when I struggle to forgive myself, for loving me where I'm at, even when I'm not in a great place. If you're not married, or if you don't have kids yet, never plan to have kids, you're not off the hook today. Your home is still a place that God calls you to use for discipleship. Whether that be friends' kids, nieces and nephews, close friends that you spend a lot of time with, people who you invite into your home, it is your job to disciple. That should cover all of us, right? The last point today is home is a place of healing. Before we get into this, I want to preface this with saying, I know not all of us come from a home that has created a space for healing. And for some of you, home is the place that created the most hurt. And I want to start by telling you, I'm sorry if that's your story. I also want to tell you that I can relate. My home was not always a safe place of healing. We experienced tremendous hurt in our home growing up. But today we're going to talk about what God intended. God intended our homes to be a safe place where healing can happen not only for us and those who live in our home, but also for anyone who enters our home. As I said, growing up, we had numerous friends live in our home. There were four of us kids. I have two brothers and a sister, and all of us could name numerous friends and even families who lived with us throughout our time growing up. They lived with us for different reasons and for different periods of time. Some lived with us as their parents were going through divorce. Some lived with us as in their home they were experiencing abuse. And some just other situations completely out of their control. Even through the chaos of my parents raising their own four small kids, they had committed to using our home for God's glory. And that meant that when someone needed a place to come for healing, our door would always be open. It wasn't anything magic that my mom or dad had to say or do. It was simply opening our home and what we had, whether that meant sleeping on the couch, whether that meant us four kids all moving into one room so that it provided a room for another family who needed a place to stay. It wasn't perfect. We had our own hurts, but my parents were committed to using that as a place of healing where God could work in others' lives and in ours. We don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to have the perfect home. It doesn't even have to be clean. But we are called to create a place where those in our home can experience God in a real way, through us being real and being raw and vulnerable, loving others as Christ loves us. A great example of this past week, one of my friends shared with me that she got a phone call from a friend, and they asked if their daughter could stay with them overnight. She'd never met the daughter, but sure, why not? She did what any of us would do, thinking of what her house looked like and what she could provide. But she paused and she set all that aside. And she was obedient. She opened her home and what she had. And the next day I received the best text. The text said that she was so glad she opened her home, because through conversation with this woman that she hosted, God brought healing to her heart. Opening our home isn't only about what it's going to do for others. It's about allowing God to work in us. She could have missed that moment, but she didn't, and God used it. Nate and I had the opportunity to be a place of healing for a young mom years ago. I was a stay-at-home mom with a new baby, a 2.5-year-old, and a barely 4-year-old. Our house was a little crazy. Nate worked shift work, and it was less than ideal with raising 3 small children, but we made it work. I got a call from my friend one day who was very young. She had a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old, and 1 on the way. Her marriage had been struggling for a while, and she called me in desperation. She said, "I don't know what to do. I need somewhere to go." And I thought, perfect. I will help you find somewhere. And then God began to speak to me. I had a home that I could open. He brought me back to all the times that I saw my mom do that. But there was one problem. I'm not my mom. I don't have the patience that my mom had. And didn't God know? I was busy. I had a routine to keep with 3 young kids. We barely had enough food to put on the table for us. But as I talked to her, it became very clear that I needed to open our home to them, as her husband was going to jail. She didn't want to be in her home. She was fearful, and so she had reached out. So they moved into our home where they lived for quite a few weeks. And in that time, my routine did have to change. There were nights that I'm sure we ate mac and cheese and chicken nuggets with the kids, because that's what we could afford. But you know what? During that time, I got to watch as God provided a place that her kids felt safe, as they got to wake up every day to a play date with my kids. A horrible situation at home or coming here where they could be distracted and feel loved and safe. I was able to take care of the kids and interact with them and give her space to wrestle with God and to ask God what he wanted from her. Her and I were able to share many cups of coffee and do a devotion together to start our day. We were able to do a study. We were able to talk together. I felt inadequate. I didn't have the right words to say. I had never experienced this, but I could open my home and I could love her. I could remind her that she was seen and she was loved and she would always have a place. And through this time, not only did God do work in her life, God did work in my life. It stretched me. I saw more of a need to seek him daily as I watched her seek him out of desperation. And through that time of healing for her and her family, we got to see a miracle happen. Her husband, who had wanted nothing to do with the church or with God and found himself in jail and at the risk of losing his wife and his kids, he opened his heart to God. He wanted what we had, He said, because we opened our home to care for his wife and kids, and that spoke to him. Again, it's not about what we did, but what God did through us when we were obedient to him. So today I'm going to ask, who is God calling you to host or disciple or open your home for as a place of healing? It may not be as drastic as these stories that you've heard today, but each of our homes should be committed to being a place to be used by him, not just a place for our comfort. So today we need to set aside the excuses, the fear of anything holding us back, and ask God, how can my home be used for your glory? Because when we commit our homes to be used for his glory, we get to witness a taste of heaven right here in the middle of earth as we see him at work. Let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for our homes.